You're listening to the Wait, What If podcast. Be prepared to expand your mind and question your reality. As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
Thank you, Miss Kimmy Pop, for that wonderful introduction all the way from Great Britain. With me tonight is Mike Stojic, back from hiatus.
Hello.
He's been traveling the world, visiting distilleries.
Seeing cool stuff.
Teaching people about the art of... I don't know. I'm just making stuff up.
I don't teach anything, anybody.
I try to make it sound...
I don't teach anybody anything. I don't know.
Here we go. You haven't been on in a while, and the second I hit record and we start the show, you decide to eat a cookie at the exact moment.
Every time, man.
I know. So I think the last time you were on, we had the psychic here.
Yep.
Yeah, which I ended up... I feel like I'm not hearing you.
I hear me.
Okay, good. What happened was your reading... These mics, these only get right directly in front of your mouth. So if you're doing something like this, you're not going to be able to hear. And what happened was they actually make, I think it's called a dynamic mic and whatever. They make a microphone that will get that whole area, which maybe I should buy for the podcast at one point or something. But that's what's going on. So you were talking and Malia was talking and other people and we missed half it, but I think we got two readings, so that was fine.
I may have intentionally have done that. She was saying some crazy things to me.
She was.
I was like, I don't know if I need the whole world to hear all this.
How did she know about the dress wearing? That's what I want to know.
I don't know, man. Maybe she's peering through my windows.
I can't, you know what? I can't say anything about that because I might have been wearing a dress on Halloween.
I saw the picture.
Did you really? Yeah. I looked ridiculous.
I saw a picture.
I kind of looked like a professional wrestler in drag with the beard, and I had long hair. It was not fun for anyone.
I can show you. I was a spaceman.
Oh, were you really? You were up in Salem, right? Or did you make it there?
I sure did.
An actual Halloween?
Yeah, sorry, I met these guys were out of Salem.
Okay.
It was some rum that we have here.
All right. Yeah, Mike went up to New England, my home state. Did you go to any of those bars I told you about? Beacon Hill Pub?
I tried.
Yeah. Nice. You had glow in the dark and everything. That thing's pretty cool. It looks like, am I correct in, it kind of looks like you're like post-crash?
I wanted to look like I was battling space aliens.
Oh, okay.
And I'd come back from something. Hold on, let me find another one.
I say that because your spacesuit looks a little damaged.
It's supposed to look a little damaged.
Okay.
Intentionally. There you go.
What do you?
Oh,
like,
nice. That's pretty cool. Did you show Savannah?
Were you Matt Damon in The Martian? Oh, no, this is definitely not that.
No. Yeah. I was intentionally not.
It's like a Ghostbuster kind of. You've been slimed.
I'm a spaceman. It's supposed to be alien blood.
Oh,
obviously. Okay. Everyone knows alien blood glows in the dark.
Battery-operated like lights I put inside the helmet so that it would glow out.
Wow. Now, did you make this when you were up there? Did you pack it and get it ready to go?
I made it here.
Oh, yeah. Well, for some reason, I thought you flew, but you drove. That's right.
No, I drove up because I brought all the podcast stuff.
Did Jamie go with you?
Yeah,
his wife Jamie's. Oh, and I forgot I didn't make my way all the way around. And Miss, or as I said on the podcast last time, and she didn't want me to say this.
Right.
Doctor Savannah Steele is back.
In the house, yes.
In the house.
Triangle Futurist. What's the official name?
You got it.
All right,
the Triangle Futurist.
Okay. Yeah, so he's here tonight, and we got some cool things to talk about. The other thing I did, I forgot to mention, it was like, I don't know, it was 9 o'clock at night. Kids were in bed. Actually, no, it was earlier than that. It was like 7:30. We're just putting the kids to bed. My 2-year-old, we made it to the other street. We did this street in the daylight, and the second we got to the other street, he had his first experience in visceral fear, like what horror truly is. And he was looking at something. He was looking at a pumpkin or something, and this kid came behind him with this horrible mask on, and he turned around, and it wasn't like, oh, you scared me. It was like, there is a real monster there in front of me. Holy I'm going to die. So our Halloween just went south at that point. We felt like horrible parents, so we came home. But I wasn't ready for it to be over.
He's scarred for life.
I know. I keep thinking about that. He was, but he hasn't talked about it. He'll bring up stuff from like months ago. Harper, Malia's girl, fell and got grass in her face, and that was like, I don't know, a year ago. And he'll sit there someday, and we'll be doing whatever, and he'll say, Harper got grass in her face. I'm like, I don't even remember that. That's so, for I guess a 2-year-old, that's like, you know,
it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like us remembering something, I don't know, half of 30, whatever you are, 15 years ago, 18 years ago. Right. You think about it, right? I mean, it'd be that long ago. Okay, so what should we talk about tonight? Elon Musk. That's the first thing I want to talk about. I know we had mentioned some things. You don't know much about him?
Oh, no. I said I could always talk about him.
Oh, really? See, I don't know much about him. I just know he's really rich, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Tesla.
Yeah, is he the Tesla guy?
Yep.
Tesla, okay.
I don't know, Tesla.
Tesla.
Man, I can't wait to buy one of those.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
When I have the money.
They're very expensive right now. I have stock. I bought quite a bit of stock in them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
That would have been a very wise purchase a few years ago, and probably is one right now.
We'll see. It's not doing horribly. It's not doing as good as I wanted it to do. Uh-huh. My Home Depot stock is doing the best,
really?
Which is weird. Yeah, my 3D stock, I dumped it finally because I was so low. It was like 70% loss for the last 2 years. I'm like, I'm not gaining this back. This thing is literally 3D printing. I think it was DDD. I just dumped it. But Elon Musk, yeah. I didn't realize. I forgot he was the electric car
and
guy.
SpaceX,
yeah. So commercial space travel, which myself, who's obsessed with space travel, and I've always wanted to be a astronaut. This is like, at least maybe someday in my lifetime, I'll be able to go to space.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
It blows my mind. I'll absolutely go.
Yeah. I think you could pay money. I thought Richard Virgin had a company where
Branson?
You could actually take...
You said Richard Branson? Virgin.
Oh, yeah. Virgin Airlines.
He is Virgin, though. Virgin, yeah.
He is. I was like, how do you know that? He is not an attractive man, but I mean, that's his business.
He owns his own island.
Richard Branson. Doesn't he have a
Virgin
company?
Virgin Galactic.
Yeah.
I believe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It'll take you out into basically space.
Really?
Yeah. Just for a few.
Yeah, for like minutes. Hundreds of thousands, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have that kind of money. Although my Tesla stock, who knows? So I'm bringing up Elon Musk because this is kind of this thing he's been working on. It's called the Hyperloop. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bullet that humans sit in, and it can go the speed of sound based on, like, you basically go in a tube of some sort, and it's in a vacuum, and there's electromagnetic forces and whatever, and they just without friction and can shoot you all the way to another
city. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Like, it, not instantly, but
seriously,
you don't have to worry about air travel. You don't have to worry about any of that. You just go.
Are you sitting in some kind of car?
Yeah. You're in a,
a pod or something?
Yeah. Like a pod. That's a good way of describing it. But I had read about it, and I thought it was just like, you know, a future thing. Like, hey, someday they're starting construction in 3 weeks on it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Let me read to you my report that I found. So construction is reportedly starting in a few weeks of Elon Musk's Hyperloop. A test track for, well, he talks about test track and how they've been doing it. Hyperloop transportation technologies will essentially be building large elevated tubes filled with vacuums and magnets, as well as computer animated capsules or automated capsules that can achieve speeds up to 760 miles per hour. Pretty close to the speed of sound. That said, the capsules only travel, I guess when people are in them, they only travel up to 160 miles an hour. But it's kind of cool because, I mean, if you think about it, let's say you're doing local travel here to Washington, D.C., you can hop on one of those things and be there in a couple hours. Not even less than that, like probably an hour, which right now it's like a 5-hour drive.
It's kind of funny because we're sort of moving from the office. We're kind of starting to have our offices at home. A lot of us are working from home now in increasing fashion. But it's kind of interesting because this kind of technology will make it possible to live in L.A. and go to work in New York City.
That's true. And think about, like, if they're inexpensive, I don't know how expensive they are, but he's into technology that's accessible, I guess. The idea, if you're going to build something this important, it would have to be accessible. I mean, otherwise, why would you even bother putting money into it? And if you get these out in rural areas, I mean, think about, you could get people into seeing medical, you know, facilities, and get people into the cities. You can get, I mean, it would just completely change the way we do mass transportation.
It's true, but at the same time, will it be necessary by the time that's available?
Oh, I got you. Like, you won't have to
bring all the technology to the rural communities.
Kind of like
I would imagine.
Kind of like compact discs. They sort of missed their. They didn't miss their niche. They had their place for like 20 years, but nothing long term. I mean, if you're still using compact disc for stuff, you're out of touch. It's all on the cloud and digital now. So maybe you're right. Maybe if they, this could be something that could bridge us to the next.
I don't know. I still think you're going to, I mean, for as much as you can bring technology to you, I still want to see Rome. I still want to travel and see stuff. So
would you go under the ocean, one of those things? Oh, actually, that'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
Amazing.
Well, that was the first time I heard about something that was similar to the Hyperloop technology. I remember Ray Kurzweil, he has a newsletter, and he talked about, there was an article about this project, and maybe, who knows if it's actually going to happen, but I think that the Chinese were planning to have a similar bullet kind of train.
Okay.
That went from Shanghai to New York.
Whoa.
In 2 hours.
Whoa.
So...
that's cool. Branson, speaking of Branson, didn't he want to do, he had a space plane where, and I think we were just talking about this, but he had one where like you would take off from New York, climb to altitude, then go Mach 7 or whatever. By altitude, I mean outer space, and then come back, re-entry, and same thing, be at Singapore in an hour or whatever. Mm. But yeah, I think it kind of sucks where we are in our 30s because...
we'll be too old,
because do you think we're going to be too old, or do you think we're at the cusp of this? Because remember, and I think we talked about this last time you were here, Savannah, was that if like we picture the future in the same we base what we think inventions are going to be based on how technology's advanced over the last 30 years, but it's like this, it goes, what do you call that? If you're looking for, if you look at a graph, it's not going in the same slope. It's going up and up and up.
Exponential growth.
Yeah. So if we look back 30 years ago versus 30 years from now, I mean, so maybe, maybe next 10 years, we'll start seeing crazy stuff like that.
Well, if there's some sort of gene therapy that helps us stay young, then
absolutely.
It can happen in the next 30 years and it doesn't matter.
And we're going to touch on that later on.
Yes.
In the program.
Foreshadowing.
So I thought that was pretty cool that's actually getting built. I'm sick of hearing about things like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And even with medicines, you hear all these like really cool things and they're like, and human trials will start in 2032. And you're like, oh, I don't care about that.
I
want to know stuff that's coming around the corner and that's being built. So we might see that in the next couple of years.
Well, did they have projections for when it was going to be done?
I'm sure he did. Let's see here. I wouldn't print that. Why would I do? Oh no, here it is. Bishop Gabriel Gresta, the chief operating officer of Hyperloop Transportation Technology, said the prototype will be built in Quay Valley in California. It will cover 5 miles and could take 32 months to complete. So what's that, 3 years? Just about 3 years. He added in an interview to whatever the magazine is, he estimates the track could be built at a cost of $150 million, which isn't that bad. I mean, think about like, I imagine.
Change.
Yeah, because there's some Air Force jets that are, billions of dollars for one. $150 million, really, that's not bad when you're talking about some sort of mass transportation system.
Well, how many masses can it actually transport?
It's just one person. And you got to wait in line for hours. Yeah, it's this big thing, and it's just a bunch of idiots waiting in line. Yeah.
So, this reminds me of something I saw, and this is terrible. I shouldn't admit this, but I saw it on Facebook this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's some company in UAB, the United Arab Emirates.
UAE.
Did I say B?
You did.
UAE.
There, so you can sit comfortably and.
I just move your mic so you can.
I was trying to keep it away from me because I didn't want people to hear like Darth Vader like breathing and
because that's what I'm doing. Yeah, it's
no. I feel like I breathe loudly. I don't know.
Don't worry about it. You won't.
But
no, go ahead.
But it was jetpacks. Literally, they showed
like from the Jetsons
on jetpacks.
Where was this? Say this again.
Flying out in space in UAE.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. It looked real. I don't know if it's maybe some sort of early April Fool's joke, but
it just sounds horrible, like a horrible idea.
Well, it was working. I mean, these people were flying, and they were literally flying next to a plane. So they must have been going pretty fast.
Whoa.
It looked amazing.
I saw that picture too.
I hope that it's true. Though.
Since I was a child, me and my neighbor, we tried to put wings on his radio flyer and roll it down his driveway and get air, and we never could. But while we were putting it together, in my head, I was like, okay, so we'll probably go up around the south side of the house and then come around and we'll land on the front lawn. I literally thought this. I was 16. kidding. Yeah, so if the ability to actually strap something on and fly around would be really, really cool.
Wouldn't that just burn?
I imagine.
Like your back?
Well, it depends on what it's using for. I mean, all you need
that's
is...
a good point.
All you need is...
I mean, what is it?
Is it compressed air or some sort of compressed chemical?
That's a lot.
They look like jets.
Air to push.
Like actual fire shooting out? Well, they have to come up with a way to do it.
I think they were called jetpacks, so I imagine there might have been something combusting.
Wow.
Yeah, I suppose. Man, and you'd have to carry the fuel too, right?
Yeah, that's why I was saying it's a horrible idea. Just death.
I think it's a great idea.
The Rocketeer being a real thing is pretty neat to me. I love the Rocketeer.
I know. These are real life Rocketeers.
I think it's amazing.
Have you seen the ones that suck water? So it's like there's a...
It was attached to them.
Yeah. There's like a thing that looks like a jet ski.
Yes.
And you hook up to it.
Flyboarding, right?
Yeah. And you're on a... it's a jetpack, but it shoots water out instead of, and it's kind of cool. I mean, you're like 30 feet in the air and these guys go underwater and then come back up. And I mean, it looks like a horrible idea. Lots of broken.
Have you seen the guys who actually get destroyed on those things?
No, like crash and do all that. No, but now I want to.
Well, because they get out of control and it's like, bam.
Have you ever seen Eastbound and Down?
No, I've only seen like one of the
episodes. It's an essential watch. Have you seen it?
No.
It's on, it's an HBO show.
God,
yeah,
that guy pisses me off, man.
Oh, you don't like him? No, I can't remember his name off the. I like him because
the worst person ever.
I because his character is always that guy.
His character is terrible.
But in real life, he's just like an average dude. That's why I like him. His I don't know. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. But did you see that apocalypse movie with James Franco?
I saw it.
He was in that too. He was like the jerk, right?
Same character as that he plays in Eastbound Down.
Hysterical. But in that movie he's got all this money and he's just blowing his money because he's a professional athlete and he's riding around on one of those and
that's right.
That's my old story.
Good story.
Funny. Edit that part out. 19 minutes 53 seconds. Or I'll just edit your laughing in and then I'll sound like a rock star.
There you go.
Other thing I picked up on today, this was, I thought, pretty cool. There's a guy, he was on Joe Rogan. I can't remember the name of the scientist's name, but he was talking about carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Considering, if you consider the volume of the atmosphere and you consider the amount of carbon dioxide that humans are putting in there, it would be the same as having a fish tank with 100,000 fish in it. So a very big fish tank, 100,000 fish swimming around, and every 10 years you add a fish to it. And that was the equivalent to how much CO2 we were adding into the atmosphere. And the math checked out. I looked at it. Yeah, so it kind of... But with that said, so that, there is a report recently, global cooling, decade-long ice age predicted when the sun hibernates. So the sun goes through phases. You'll have a high solar activity and low solar activity. And they predict that the sun's about to switch into a low solar activity phase around 2030, which will cause a mini ice age that was seen around the 1600s to early 1700s.
Yikes!
Yeah, that the Thames River froze, I guess, solid. It was that cold. So yeah, there's a bunch of scientists out there saying the sun might be going into a little bit of a hibernation phase and everything could be frozen anyways for about 10 to 20 years. So what's the point?
Thoughts? So everybody start dumping as much carbon dioxide as you can.
So basically what it says is the big freeze could last a decade as the sun goes to sleep. A team of European researchers have unveiled a scientific model showing that the Earth is likely to experience a mini ice age from 2030 to 2040 as a result of decreased solar activity.
So if global warming is a real thing and there's this greenhouse effect and we keep pumping the carbon into the air, and then when this thing happens, it could potentially give us a false sense of security where we're not doing as much damage as we think we are, but in fact we are doing the damage, and now the Earth is getting colder, and then when this hibernation ends, and we start going back to what we think is normal, it's actually going to be a whole heck of a lot worse.
It just melts, and then we it just continues to melt.
Yeah, the whole it's that much worse because of the damage we've done and continue to do during this hibernation period.
That is
we're
a possibility.
Not aware because we have this false sense of security that yeah. it's not that bad because everything just keeps getting colder.
Well, in the
we keep releasing all this stuff into the atmosphere.
If we figure out how to survive the ice age, then.
You said it happened in the 16 and 1700s, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, man's already figured out how to survive it.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. It's
like everybody obviously died. Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago.
I mean, in those days, it was probably a lot worse because you had to just chop trees and stay warm that way.
Heaters and stuff mm-hmm. that we have now. So.
I think it'd be kind of cool. Have some snow down here.
No, I hate the snow, man.
Really?
I mean, I like to visit the snow and ski, but god damn, I wouldn't want
just a little.
I wouldn't want to live in it. No, no.
Where you've never? You're from Florida, that's right.
Yeah, I lived in upstate Virginia by DC for 3 years, and we got blasted a couple times though. Remember bad snowstorms came through?
Yeah,
I was snowed in for a week and a half. We don't have the infrastructure.
I grew up in New Hampshire, son.
All right,
sit down.
Hey, easy.
That's why
the snow still sucks. I don't care where you're from.
Yeah, no. Eventually, yes. It grows on you. I mean, it doesn't grow on you. It has the opposite effect. So you move to New Hampshire, you're like, oh, this is wonderful. It's a winter wonderland. And then 6 months later, you're sharpening your axe in the shed and you're looking all fun and no play.
It turns into The Shining.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Great. Oh, and then here's the last bit of information I want to bring up because I'm pissed that I wasn't born 15 years ago. No. That's wrong. 15 years after I was born. I wish I was 15 years younger. That's what I was talking about.
And I'm so confused.
I'm slightly
so
dyslexic.
Well articulated.
Yeah. Again, I just talk on this thing. I'm not a... So, NASA is actually hiring astronauts. First time they've done that in years. You can go on to NASA. And let's see. It says, in anticipation of returning human spaceflight... Anticipation of returning human spaceflight launches to... How come I can't read that? What's going on here? In anticipation of returning human spaceflight launches to American soil. Does something not sound right there?
Mm-mm. That doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't.
In anticipation of returning...
To spaceflight?
Returning human spaceflight launches... Got it. All right, here we go. In anticipation of returning human spaceflight launches to America and in preparation for the agency's journey to Mars, NASA announced it will soon begin accepting applications to the next class of astronaut candidates. With more human spacecraft in development in the United States today than at any other time in history, future astronauts will be launched again, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know. What do you think the cutoff is for age? You think it's 38? Sit down with the wife and kids and be like, okay, we're going to be having hot dogs and macaroni and cheese for a while because I've quit my job and I've applied to be a NASA astronaut. Nothing? No? Okay.
That's
great. Let's move on.
Does it matter how... there have been older folks in space, right? Older. What's the oldest astronaut? Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. The oldest astronaut?
Yeah, I don't know.
Buzz and Neil Armstrong.
How old were they when they
were in their 40s, early 40s,
really?
Or mid-30s, early 40s?
I thought
40s,
so.
Yeah.
I thought they might
Yeah, astronauts are always guys 40s. In their 40s. They're always slightly grayed, but still in really good shape.
You're good then.
Well, I get the good shape thing. I got the grade part. Is
past the age limit yet?
That's funny.
I thought that NASA was closing down. I thought they didn't have any funding. That was
That they did do that
many years ago
for a while, which is the most depressing day of my life. But they're back. They're gonna
Well, to me, I thought it doesn't matter because we're now doing this in a private
That's true.
SpaceX was born. I think Jeff Bezos has Blue Horizon or Blue Water.
Oh,
something.
That's right.
Blue something.
He's doing the same thing. I forgot.
Everyone's racing to go to space. One just died, and they were all up in arms. Oh, not up in arms. Everyone was shocked. These are guys that launch rockets to themselves and shoot themselves into outer space, and one died, and they were freaking out. It's like, look in the history of avionics. People tend to die doing these things. It's a horribly dangerous endeavor. So, but yeah, just last summer there was a crash out, and it was Branson's.
Virgin Galactic.
It was one. I don't remember. It was one of his. It crashed out in the desert, killed one guy, and I think the other one survived.
Ugh.
Yeah. I met Chuck Yeager.
Oh, no kidding.
There's the great days of my life. Marriage, children being born, and then meeting Chuck Yeager is right around there. I was out in Vegas a couple years ago with a friend of mine who actually is a director. He does commercials and things like that. And he was filming a documentary about him doing, he was going to break the speed of sound at the age of 80. I think he was 89 at the time. He's still alive. Mm-hmm. So he was like, hey, do you want to go? And I had a flight back the next day. And I was like, yes. Actually, I was in California. I had a flight back. And I had to I'm going to cancel everything. I am going with you to meet Chuck Yeager. And it was so cool. To me, it was like standing next to Christopher Columbus. Because this guy, he was the first guy to break the sound barrier. Without him, you know, we weren't going to space. He spearheaded the space program, which he wasn't invited to be part of because he didn't have a college degree, which I thought was kind of interesting.
That sucks.
Yeah. He would have been... You know, had they taken non-college graduates at the time, he easily would have been on the Mercury 7.
I had his video game.
Chuck Yeager had a video game?
Yeah. It wasn't really like a Nintendo game. It was for the computer. So I guess a computer game. It's called Chuck Yeager's Air Combat.
Cool.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not kidding. Look it up.
It's
actually a really cool game. It was on the computer, the PC situation. Yeah. It might have been floppy disks. It was a long time ago.
Wow. I had a Commodore 64. Is it like a Commodore 64 game?
No, it was on my PC, so I was...
You don't even know what a Commodore 64 is.
I had an Atari. Is that before the Commodore?
We had Ataris. I had Ataris. Yeah. No, I think a Commodore came before, I guess. I don't really know.
I'm not old, but I'm not young either, so I know some things. I get stuff.
I had a Intellivision. You guys ever remember or seen an Intellivision? It was called Intellivision. It was like one word, like intelligent vision, Intellivision. And it had a little disc. They tried to compete with like maybe ColecoVision, maybe Atari. I think they were trying to compete with the first Atari. And they obviously lost. But yeah, that's what I had.
You ever hear of the Socrates?
It sounds familiar. Was it a handheld device?
No, it was the same time the Atari was out, and it plugged into the TV and had little games, but it was all like learning and educational stuff.
Oh,
stupid.
It was pretty lame, yeah. Mom bought that for us, and we had to like do math problems on it.
Oh, no. That's horrible.
and then like the little guy would do stuff if you got your question right. Like that's how you won the day, by doing your multiplication
side. Everyone else is like Pitfall and Pac-Man, and you're like, algebra.
Five divided by what? Oh, man. Just guess.
That's
wrong
funny.
Answer again.
So, last time you were here, moving right along.
Perfect,
last time,
perfect transition.
Last time you were here, we talked about, you had mentioned something, and you just remember certain things, and you said it would be really cool if you could upload your intelligence and become a goddess in, I guess, your own world or in the...
Well, how do you define goddess? I mean, how do you define a god?
How would you? You might not remember saying this, but
yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
I do remember.
So someone of infinite knowledge and power, omniscient and omnipotent.
Yeah.
Omnipotent. Yeah. Omnipotent, right? Is that the same thing?
Close enough. I mean,
my intelligence is just, everyone who listens to this would be like, this guy can't read and he can't pronounce anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think, why would it have to be in my own world? Couldn't I be in the world with everybody else who are also omniscient, omnipotent?
Yeah, but how would that happen? Like,
omnipotent.
Well, that means potent is powerful. Omni is all-encompassing power. Yeah,
it works. Probably another way to
pronounce. It's for the British, probably say it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Omnipotent.
We'll ask your announcer.
And I think, and I've brought this concept up a few times, where we take our brains and we replace a little bit at a time. And at what point do you stop becoming you, or you stop being you? Mm-hmm. So let's say we do that. Let's say we've replaced our brains with circuits, and now we're thinking on computer level thought. So are we on like a mainframe somewhere? I guess my question for you is like, how do you see that? What's your thought about that? Like, where this goddess, where would she reside? What?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. I haven't thought about that one. I actually imagine in the cloud, but that doesn't make any sense.
No, I guess it does make sense, because I guess everything could be wired at some point.
Yeah.
Everything is wired now.
So okay, here's, this kind of comes back to our talk about quantum mechanics or quantum theory or whatever.
Quantum physics, yeah.
Which I don't understand anything about, but I'm going to pretend like I do.
Okay, and we had talked about this before we started recording.
But so, here's my little weird theory.
Okay.
And that, yeah, well, anyway, so right now, microchips or whatever, memory, we could store a certain amount of information in a certain size of disk or whatever we're using to store information in. And that's getting smaller and smaller.
Right.
And it hasn't shown any sort of halt in the rate at which it gets smaller. Mm-hmm. And it's getting smaller at an accelerating fashion a la Moore's Law.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing to stop it from being infinitely small.
Well, I mean, it can't be smaller than like molecules because
we don't know what the smallest thing is, right? We still don't even know. I think they're still figuring these things out.
There's quarks and things like that, which are,
and it may not end there.
Subatomic particles. Yeah. No.
So we don't really know.
Right.
So as it gets smaller and smaller, if you can think that my intelligence, my brain, my consciousness can be stored in that floppy disk. Well, my consciousness can be stored in something smaller and smaller and smaller. And so I thought about this the other day. I was thinking, it seems like then I don't know if there aren't many, like perhaps there in another Earth somewhere light years away, they've figured that out and they have managed to download their consciousnesses into these tiny little whatever
subatomic particles, like the quantum world,
subatomic particles, and maybe perhaps they know how to travel, and maybe they're here, maybe they're in our brains.
I never considered it that way. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because subatomic, this is your thing.
You need to write
a book about this. So subatomic particles we know act spooky. So they don't obey any of the laws of physics. Mm-hmm. They snap in and out of existence. There's wormholes, so they technically travel through time. They travel. Information can spread between two entangled quantum particles faster than the speed of light. So it's a really weird world. But I guess you're right. Yeah, if you lived there, if your intelligence was down at that level, it would almost be like pulling back the curtain to our reality. Like we only exist our existence is first of all between our ears, right? So it's only what we experience through our senses, and that's it. We don't know beyond our senses. If we can somehow, and our senses are the physical world, if we can get beyond the physical world, and I don't know, maybe like I said, but you pull back the curtain of this physical world and see the basics of what everything is made out of, maybe it is as spooky as it seems.
Or not so much. Maybe we would understand everything if we could get to that level of understanding.
Where does it, and there was a couple of things actually I want to bring up in this stuff I looked up. So the term of an existence beyond your physical body is called Navitar. So you're existing beyond, or you're existing somewhere else. You're operating a different physical being.
Yeah.
It's your new whatever. And they said that there's a bunch of different kinds. There's like a remote avatar, which they have now. There was a guy who gave a speech on artificial intelligence or robots or something like that. And he did the whole thing from his hotel room at this conference. And he had a robot of himself, you know, with like, and it was stupid looking. I mean, if you've seen robots now, they move all weird, and it looked like him, but he gave the whole speech and he could see as it moved around and everything. So that's remote. And then there's brain transfer, where we transfer our brain into an avatar body. So basically, you pull your actual physical brain out and stick it into another body.
Yeah. I really want to do that.
Are you gonna
Yes. I want it to be like Britney Spears' body and my brain. Who wouldn't want that?
Well, I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, obviously not a dude.
That's true. So wait. So you would, like a robot body.
I don't know. Britney Spears is the first person I can think of. Yeah. I don't know why I couldn't think of somebody
that's funny.
More fit. Anyway.
So you take your brain out and you put it in there. So I guess, that's the next thing. An augment, or what does it say, Aaron? Excuse me. An argument for the step is that in many ways, brain tissue ages much more slowly than body tissues, although this would depend on our ability to ward off the pathologies like that lead to Alzheimer's and ALS and things like that. So these are central nervous system diseases. To realize brain transfer would require big improvements in brain machine interfaces, including sensation and proprioception. Proprioception is how you know if you're up or down or left or right or whatever, which are totally absent currently. So, well, it says, I think it's funny, this says those interfaces are lacking, but no, I think the idea of pulling your brain out and putting in a robot is lacking. But if you could, yeah. I guess there's the way of wiring the robot into that brain. Or I say robot, I guess it could be anything, right? It could be a vat of fluid and you're hooked up to the internet.
Sure.
Next part would be then there's the mind.
I did want to say one thing about the brain machine interface. I mean, uh-huh. I thought that those, I mean, right now, I mean, they can kind of set you up, and it's one of those things where you kind of have to train it, or you have to train your brain to kind of work with the interface.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Prosthetics. So they have prosthetics that work on nerve impulse. Mm-hmm. The old ones used to be like could measure like muscle movement.
Yeah.
So if you activated your flexors of your forearm, it would, or extensors of your forearm, it would extend the hand or the whatever. are you getting bored, Mike? chime in. But now they can actually hook up wires and pick up the nerve transmission to do that. And actually they're figuring out how to stimulate the nerve so you can feel touch, and people can feel touch now and feel heat, which is bizarre. Cool. Yeah,
it's awesome.
I mean, this is from a long time ago, maybe a few years ago, but I think they were able to put, I mean, you would put on some sort of headgear and you would be able to control like a little, I mean, it wasn't
a helicopter, right?
Yeah,
Joe Rogan did that on Joe Rogan Questions Everything. He flew a helicopter, and what they basically did is they how do they do it? You take like turning left and you associate it with, I don't know, the red square. So they map the activity when you think of a red square in your brain, and then they hook up an electrode there. And so that means turn left. So in your brain, you're like, okay, I'm thinking of a purple triangle, and that's to raise it. So like you're controlling it, literally just having thoughts, which is kind of wild. And he was flying this thing around, and then he would lose concentration, it would crash. It was kind of cool. But
I think that's one of those things also that if you worked on it too, if you practiced with whatever object you were trying to control, mm-hmm. I think you'd get a lot better at it. We could all just be doing that all the time.
So what you're saying is basically the second part of Avatar, the second part of your consciousness, or you leaving your earthly body. Mm-hmm. So brain transfer would be ways that we could basically connect our brain to mechanical body. Isn't that so bizarre? So think about just a vat of your brain, and that's you. So your thoughts are still in there, but there's no, your eyes aren't there, your ear, it's just your brain floating in there.
Seems unprotected.
Can you imagine walking into a room and just seeing a bunch of brains like in a...
weird. I think it'd be weird to be the brain in the thing. And like,
and it's a person, it's a conscious person.
But you wouldn't have any new experiences.
Well, maybe you would though.
Program somebody, like the program guy would program experiences into your...
Yeah, I mean, if you lived you in that case, anything, like, if you lived in like a virtual world,
yeah,
you
had to be an architect, and he could program things like in the Matrix.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're like.
Otherwise, you'd have no new experiences. You just always remember what you did.
No, your new experiences would be in the
sitting in the tank.
No. Your consciousness, uh-huh. and that goes to the second one: mind upload to avatar body. So this is the physical.
Somebody would create the world that your brain thought it was existing.
Yeah, and then you live in this computer simulation. But I mean, if you're like right now, suppose this was that world.
I suppose it could be. Yeah.
It works fine, right?
No, sure.
Yeah.
If that's the way it is, I suppose it works fine.
Yeah.
I guess it could work better. I mean, I feel like I could have better luck at some things. So if this wasn't real and I'm just imagining it, or someone's programming stuff, I would hope.
Could it be a nightmare? Did you ever see Vanilla Sky? That was a good flick.
This is so funny because I was having a similar conversation about sort of living a virtual life, and Vanilla Sky was the first movie that was brought up. I actually really like that movie.
Yeah, I've heard of that movie.
It got mixed reviews. It was like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, which surprised me.
People did not like it.
I thought it was really good. Well, there's the whole like death, murder, rape scene that is like, what is going on here?
I forgot about that one.
When you're watching the movie, you're like, because you slowly figure out what's going on. And towards the end, they do the big reveal, right? But in the middle of the movie, you realize he's I mean, the movie's 15 years old. I can spoil it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
You realize that he's
never seen it.
He's been frozen. Sorry,
it,
Mike.
Now I'll never watch it.
No, you can still. Well, I mean,
nah, it's over now.
You realize that his body has been frozen, and he's in like a perpetual dream. Until, you know how people have their heads frozen nowadays, like this point, Dead Splinter, Ted Williams froze his brain.
Didn't Walt Disney do that?
Walt Disney, yeah. And the idea is in this movie, if you have your brain frozen, they can give you like a dream state and put you in this virtual reality until they finally thaw you out, right? And they give you the power to thaw out. So if you ever discover that you're in this dream state, you have to do something extremely scary to show that you know that this is just a dream and not real. His was jumping off the building because he was afraid of heights.
Oh.
Remember at the end, he jumps off the building and he wakes up on the table. Well, you don't see that. You just see his eye open. I loved that movie. But the point of it is it becomes a nightmare. So you think it's supposed to be this wonderful dream and his dream becomes a nightmare. And then everything makes sense as you're watching it because you're like, oh, that's why everything was so messed up in the middle of this movie, because he just slowly went into a nightmare.
I mean, people think that living in a virtual reality, the first reaction, and it was my reaction too, is to kind of cringe. You want to live a real life.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a perfect simulation, I kind of think, why not?
If all your senses are stimulated into that, then
everything's
yeah.
the same. I mean, probably you don't want everything to be perfect for you, just because I think we kind of talked about this a lot the last time. If everything works perfectly for you, then it does kind of, it gets negative. Like you need a challenge in life. Like we already talked about that, but yeah, if you have some challenges and everything else is pretty much the same. I mean, I
think it's
I would
like,
do it.
Like why rich people don't, they say money doesn't buy happiness. And we're like, try me. But I guess when you're at that point and you're just like, oh, I like that Lamborghini, I'll just go buy it. Yeah. So, I mean, if you lived in a world where everything was perfect, I don't know. But yeah, that's the mind upload to Avatar. And then there's another one. It's called Mind Upload to Holographic Bodies, which I don't see the point of this one. Because if you're already in your virtual world, why would you come back into the physical world into a hologram? So how they describe it is, the guy who wrote this article, I'm not totally clear on what would be so great about holographic bodies. It seems to me that after achieving mind upload to hardware, that the next desirable step would be networking our consciousness more directly into a deep metaconsciousness. So the idea there is, if this is the hierarchy of how we become, how we move into the, I don't know, the out of our physical bodies into this,
into the cloud.
Yeah.
Lack of a better term.
Then the last thing is to become a hologram. And that makes no sense because
I'd have to think about that one. I don't know. That's
yeah. It would make more sense to be. And if you could have like a perpetual mainframe, so let's say you have let's back up off the hologram one and just say, who knows what they were thinking with that one, back to uploading your consciousness. If they could have like some sort of perpetual mainframe. So how we look at it is we have the internet, right?
Yeah.
But when this is possible, who knows? Everything, when you start talking about like nanotechnology, there's a way that everything can be connected. Everything can be wired. The earth, you can technically wire up. And when I say wire, I mean you connect a communication between all the molecules between here and Saturn. And you can literally drive your consciousness to Saturn.
Well, that's kind of what Isaac Asimov describes in the last question. Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we might have.
Yeah, where he sort of, it kind of moves, it starts with these people in a certain time period, and they kind of move. It's the book kind of, or it's a short story, skips over time, and it goes way ahead in the future. And you know, I guess maybe it starts with people on Earth and, you know, just living as they normally would. And then the next thing you know, they're traveling in a spaceship. And then the next thing you know, their minds are just traveling through the,
yeah,
through the space.
Yeah. And that's what,
the universe.
That's what people who are afraid of nanotechnology say, that like, if you get to a certain level, it can expand itself. Obviously it just moves from molecule to molecule. And there's really, I mean, there is empty space in outer space, so it would have to make its way to other planets, but it can, it's called like repurposing of molecules. And technically it can, it's just basically the idea that, I don't know what it is. Never mind.
Edit out. That sounds really interesting. Yeah. Though. I need to understand a little bit more about that. So, 'cause that sounds really.
So a nanobot is the size of a molecule, and it has the ability to transfer a molecule into whatever it wants to make it. So it can splice molecules together. It can turn. So it can take a grain of sugar and turn it into some sort of energy for a mainframe computer, mm-hmm. being the AI or whatever it is. So, or it can take a piece of wood on your table, or the steel on your car, or the, or your flesh, and turn it into whatever it needs. And a lot of people talk about this transfer of, and it can replicate itself. So almost like you drop a rock into a pool of water and you watch the ripples go out. Well, you start one of these nanobots that can replicate and repurpose every molecule around it. It'll just slowly move out across existence and turn everything into a gray goo that,
yikes,
powers.
That's scary.
Yeah. Isn't that frightening? And people are actually, that's why Stephen Hawking is afraid of, Stephen Hawking, even
Hawking.
Elon. Oh, what did I say? Stephen Hawking. Elon Musk is another one. They don't like the idea of artificial AI. Intelligence. Yeah, because it's a scary thing. And I know it sounds like we're jumping around here, but no, AI is sort of that. What we're getting at is this reality of, or this living in a post-physical world, living in a computer area. Like, what would that consist of? That would consist of a giant mainframe of computers. And how would that exist? Well, you have an AI that learns how to link everything. And if you can link everything physically, you can also link everything that has a molecule has the potential of becoming part of it. Yeah. It's terrifying stuff. I told you about the book. It was called, Our Final Invention.
Yeah.
I never remember the guy's last name, Beckett or it's on the website, waywhatif.com. it's terrifying. But yeah, that's the hold.
It's terrifying, but also there's a lot of negative that could happen, but nobody ever pays attention to the fact that there's a whole lot of positive that could happen. Inventions like those.
But you have to make sure that the negatives don't happen, because it could mean the end of the universe.
The negatives would definitely outweigh the positives, but
it's like we could fly. With just by flapping our arms in this weird virtual world, because that would be cool.
That would be awesome.
My greatest, like.
Well, we can fly now because there are jetpacks. So
that is true. bring it back. Nice job. Moving on. So the other thing I want to bring up, and you had brought this up, and I want to touch on this, and then this is going to piggyback onto the last thing. So pig to primate organ transplants. Yeah. You had mentioned this, and I was like, at first when I heard it, I was like. So they're growing organs. But then I thought about it and I was like, wait a minute, this is like, so the idea would be you take a pig, you cut out the gene. So you have a diseased liver, you need a new liver. So you get a liver transplant. That liver goes into my body. Let's say you drop dead. I get your liver. Actually, you don't even have to be dead. You can have living donors for mm-hmm. livers, whatever. So it goes in my body. The surface of all the cells that make up your hepatocytes, all the cells that make up your liver and all that have markers on it. Everything has these little markers on it, and we can't have a perfect fit. There's no perfect puzzle piece. You can get as close to perfect. I think a twin might be as perfect. I mean, those, they can basically trade organs and be fine. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you're never going to find a perfect match. You can get really close. So you get as close as you can to your own body. Mm-hmm. You get that liver, and then for the rest of your life, you're on medicines to prevent your body from rejecting the liver. Because like anything that enters your body that's foreign, the body identifies it and destroys it because it's a foreign, it's not, I mean, it's just the way we're designed.
Right.
The idea here is, why not take pigs, which is weird because they're not that close. I mean, they're close to humans, but whatever. You take a pig and you take out all those, or not all of them, but you work on you take their DNA and you take out those sugars and those, there's these different things, and I'm not a transplant specialist. I don't know anything about this or too much about it. You take out those markers and then it becomes better tolerated. So instead of me waiting for someone with my blood type to die before I get their liver, you can say, well, here's a pig right here. And it's completely, you know, it's everyone can take it. It's universal. And you put this in your body and you're still on medicines because your body's always going to reject it, but not to the level of you getting another human being's liver, or maybe at the same level as you getting another human being's liver. But the idea is that you can now, you don't have to wait for someone to drop dead. You just have a whole bunch of pigs here, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. That's a total, that's coming out now. They did it in 2003 when they started. Yeah.
And so my understanding is that with pigs or with animal to human transplants, they're mm-hmm. really only able to transplant things like tubing, like
an esophagus
or like some skin or
something. No, you're right about that. Yeah.
But they're not able to actually transplant yet.
They haven't done it on a human. Well, no, they did do it on a human, but it hadn't been, they actually arrested the guy. It was in India. They put, they put a pig heart in a person or a liver and he died, and they arrested the doctor for murder. 'Cause it's not legal to do that. Yeah, and you die pretty quick when it happens, for obvious reasons.
Kind of sounds like they haven't done it.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, but...
That's exactly right.
They haven't done it to humans, but it's in the crosshairs. It's not something that's like, oh, down the road, and they've kept a baboon alive for 945 days. And the only reason why it died, and this was with a human heart, is because they stopped giving him the immune suppressant, and then he died. But I mean, they are going to be doing, and I'm sure it says here somewhere when they're going to start doing it.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's just waiting for, and I want to say it was like the next couple of years, like by 2020, they're going to have human test subjects for this. 'Cause it just makes sense. It just makes sense that it'll work.
Yeah.
And I think what you were saying was using the cell, we call the scaffolding. That's the best way to describe it. So you have a esophagus or
lung, and you have all of you remove the sort of the cellular component. Like I think they use some sort of detergent, and they're able to remove all of the sort of immunogenic components.
Yeah,
and
basically
then you just
all the
have
cell
the scaffolding, and I think that they were. I mean, I don't know why it seems to be taking a very long time, because when you look at this, I mean, this has been years since I've seen what they're doing in labs, which is to use the scaffolding and grow human sort of cells and structure around that scaffolding. And and even though that's been around it for, you know, I've seen it in hearts, I've seen kidneys, just, I mean, on TV, it's not like I'm actually going to the labs or anything. But
DIY buyer, you're doing this in your kitchen.
I've done this myself. And it does surprise me that it's still really not ready to put in a person. And I've never really understood why. Maybe it is the immunogenic component.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that, I mean, based on this, I think this might have been the article that I sent, which said that pigs, they finally just figured out how to remove something called a porcine endogenous retrovirus.
Okay.
Which, interestingly, is abbreviated PERV.
Insert a PERV into the equation.
And so they were able to remove that using the gene editing technique, the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing.
Okay.
And so they were saying, oh, great, now apparently, and I didn't realize this had been the issue, but apparently until that, they were able to do this quite recently. If you were to receive a transplant from a pig, you would get this virus, and I guess it must be a lot worse than the cold, because they weren't doing them because of that.
Oh, that's kind of wild.
But I'm not sure if that would be the same case if you received a transplant from like a something that had been like a pig, pair of pig lungs that had been stripped of their.
I would say no, and I'll tell you why. Because okay. they're actually doing those. I mean, you can get a bovine valve. You can get a
So what they do is,
well, the valves aren't. They're just the valve. But like, let's say it's a like the esophagus, which you've seen. They'll strip the cellular structure off it and actually put your stem cells on it. Right. So you grow your own. I mean, it's basically. It would almost be like taking your house, taking everything that makes your house off. So the walls, the pictures, and then underneath you have, you know, the scaffolding. And then you go to an identical house next door, which completely isn't your house. And then you strip everything there. And then you take everything from your house and go over there and put it on the walls. And then you go and you're like, this is my house, but it isn't. So that's exactly what happens. Yep. They strip it down. The scaffolding is left. And then they put your cells back on. And that works. And that's because it's your own body.
Yeah.
The cellular structure that makes up the scaffolding is... I think it's just like they remove everything. It's just the like collagen that's there. So there's nothing that your body will identify as foreign. And it's fascinating. I actually went, I took a tour of, it was called the McGowan Institute of Tissue Regeneration. And they had...
Is that Wake Forest?
No, it was in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon, I want to say.
Oh, are you... Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, the McGowan Institute's there. And they showed pictures. They had a guy who, they had a couple really interesting things. They had a guy, two people that had third degree burns to their face, and they did one with skin grafts. And then another one, they took his stem cells, which I guess, and I'm not 100% on how they do this, but they can replicate them pretty quickly. And they basically took an airbrush and they airbrushed his stem cells onto his face, and they showed 2 weeks later, and of course the guy with the skin graft just looked horrible. Right. Well, in 2 weeks you're still all inflamed and healing, and the guy with the stuff that was sprayed on his face looked like it had been sunburned. It was amazing.
Whoa.
Yeah. They showed a little kid that had their fingers, the end of their fingers chopped off in a door, some sort of door. And they took this, they called it pixie dust in the McGowan Institute.
That's from pigs as well, I think. It's like I wish I could remember, but it's some sort of component that, and I don't understand why they were talking about this literally on Oprah.
Oh, really?
Many years ago.
Yeah.
And I can't comprehend why that isn't everywhere. Because I want to put that stuff on my cuts. And
yeah. Well, they sprinkled it on the fingers and they grew back. Like, they sprinkled every day. They put a new layer on. And it, like, differentiated. They had fingernails. They had...
I know. It's amazing.
And this is, I mean, if you lose a limb, they can... I mean, let's say you lose a leg. Who knows? At some point, they might be able to just grow your limb back day by day with your own
cellular
structure.
Like a little lizard. Oh,
that's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, like, that's fact, and that's going. So you brought up the CRISPR-Cas9, and I want to talk about that real quick. Which, wow, we're over an hour already.
Well, there's a lot that we need to edit out. So
she looked at me when I said that. Or when she said that, you're never invited back. So the CRISPR-Cas9 is a. It's when you brought it up, I was like, yeah, I kind of understand, but I didn't really. I just said that so I looked smart. From what I understand, so how DNA works is a DNA is a really long, long molecule. And if you don't know anything about, if you're listening to the show and you don't know anything about molecular chemistry, molecular biology, really, biology is where it is. It's fascinating because when you look at molecular motors and engines, and they're literally, that's what they are. And when I was learning molecular biology, I was like, in my head, I would picture these things that looked like little motors and everything. And I was like, they can't be how they look, but that is how they look. So what happens is you have all these things in your body. Let's say in your cell, let's say in the nucleus of your cell, where you have RNA, which passes messages. It's like the messenger DNA. Well, it's not, it's RNA, but it basically, your DNA codes everything about your body. And it also codes a lot of bullshit that we don't use anymore, stuff that we share with other species and all that. But it codes everything in your body. And your RNA will come in, and a little machine will clip onto it, and it'll replicate, and it'll pick up different things and make molecules, which are basically make proteins that, you know, you hurt yourself and you gotta repair yourself. This is all going on at the cellular level with these little machines and everything. It's fascinating. It's really, really cool if you're into that sort of thing. So with that said, what they ended up doing was looking at, I believe this was a staph, or no, it was a streptococcus bacteria. So you get strep throat, this is the bacteria. They took its DNA and they were looking at it, and they said, we keep seeing this repeated sequence. And every time we see that repeated sequence, there would be, you know, something after it. And they were like, we need to figure out why this keeps happening. And they figured out that this repeated sequence activated like a molecular knife, say. So what happened was they looked at these sequences and they figured out that they were sequences from viruses. So a virus tries to attack a bacteria. The bacteria then recognizes it because it stole a piece of that DNA from the virus, or whatever it was from the virus. And went, and I'm probably doing a horrible job explaining this, but basically it then creates a cleave and it chops up the virus and kills it. So it's like you take this little section of DNA, you get a virus, it activates a machine that destroys the virus. Really cool in the sense that this is like a total molecular level defense system. So they said, well, how can we take that and put it somewhere else to put into use? So what they figured out is they can make a little machine out of this and use it to cleave sections of DNA to plug in other things. So they're literally taking this little machine, literally a microscopic machine, and they can take a human DNA and say, you know, this person has cystic fibrosis. We can take that. We can target that section of your DNA, cut it out, and put in a normal section. Mm-hmm. That makes sense at all?
Well, to be honest, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how all of this works. I can't comprehend how this repeated sequence in bacteria was then somehow applied to figure out how to cut DNA in humans. But the part that I do understand is that it can do that. So you have the CRISPR and the Cas9. I think the Cas9 component is the one that will bind to the DNA sequence of interest, and it'll cleave. It'll make a slice across the human DNA.
Yes.
The CRISPR component, I'm not really sure. Maybe it helps with identification. I'm really ignorant about it.
So. Let me try it. This is from Gizmodo, so it has to be good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. CRISPR. Okay. It's a new genome editing tool, could transform the field of biology. Basically, the short answer is that CRISPR allows scientists to edit genomes, so edit a section of your DNA with unprecedented precision, so it can go right in and edit exactly where it needs to be. The past few years have seen a flurry of firsts with CRISPR. So CRISPR, I'll tell you what it stands for. Clustered, regularly interspaced, short, palindromic repeats.
I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Repeat that. What does that mean?
Rolls right off the tongue.
Exactly. So let's see here. So what they did is they created, when they started playing with this thing, they created monkeys with targeted mutations. So if they wanted a monkey with six fingers, it could just make it. They prevented HIV infection in human cells with this, which we're, by the way, in the next 5 years, HIV is going to be cured. Mark my word, write it down right now. Yeah, wow. They're on top of that. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of new stuff out on that. Earlier this month, Chinese scientists announced that they applied the technique to non-viable human embryos. So they basically experimental embryos, hinting at CRISPR's potential cure of genetic diseases. And yes, it might even, and this is the weird part, might even lead to designer babies. So think about it down the road where people are like, you know what? I want a blonde baby. They just activate this CRISPR and there you go. You have a blonde baby. CRISPR is actually, it's a natural occurring ancient defense mechanism found in a wide range of bacteria. As far back as the 1980s, scientists observed a strange pattern in some bacterial genomes. So they noticed this weird pattern. They didn't know what was going on. It was all puzzling until science realized that the unique sequences in between repeats matched the DNA of viruses, specifically viruses that prey on bacteria. It turns out CRISPR is one part of the bacteria's immune system, which keeps bits of dangerous viruses around it so it can recognize and defend against when viruses attack. The second part of the defense mechanism is a set of enzymes called Cas, CRISPR-associated proteins.
Caps.
Yeah. Which can precisely snip DNA and slice the hell out of invading viruses. Conveniently, These genes that encode for Cas are always sitting somewhere near the CRISPR sequences. So basically, DNA, you're hijacking this defense mechanism. You're putting it in a human, and you can cut and splice and basically make cookie cutter babies. And yeah. I mean, that's the scary part. I think it's the scary part, but the potential benefit is taking genetic issues and
yeah, curing them.
Yeah.
Potentially. The thing with CRISPR-Cas9 right now is that even though it mentioned unprecedented accuracy or mm-hmm. something like that, even though it's unprecedented, it's not perfect. There's right. still a lot of errors, and that's the last thing you want if you inject it into yourself. You don't want any sure. errors when it comes to cutting your DNA.
Yeah. Now, what does that mean, though? Like, because my DNA is pretty much set in stone. I am who I am. I have
the not if you put one of these in yourself.
So literally, it'll go through my entire cell structure and see. That, that's the yeah, part I understand.
That's a good question. I don't understand that either. I don't understand because it seems like it would be localized and it wouldn't be something that would stay that way.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure. I understand exactly. Maybe it does. Maybe if you get repeated injections of it, eventually it would sort of...
That would be awesome.
...make up. And I don't know...
So you could target, like...
Because you replicate your cells. So, like, let's say I have it...
That's right. Okay.
Based on what's there. So if it's changed your DNA, then the next cycle, you will be replicating that new gene, I would imagine. Although, who knows, maybe all of my cell biology is completely...
What about... Well, yeah. I mean, no, but that makes sense. So how about this? DIY bio, people can map their own genome. If they can start activating these CRISPRs, could you sit there in your kitchen and be like, hey, do you know what? I want to be 8 feet tall.
I'm hoping so.
And then you inject yourself and just a whole group of superhumans that they made in their kitchen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that someday some crazy things are going to be possible. Maybe not being 8 feet tall. I don't know how that would happen. I think you'd have to just take growth factor for that.
Well, if it's a genetic thing, then you could do it, right? I mean, it is a genetic thing. We know that.
Yeah. Well, there's something else that growing is a little bit different, I think, than other things. I don't know.
Moses brought up some things that I thought was pretty cool. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
You're going to have to have that during your growth cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. You could make your bones more dense. You could alter your cellular respiration. So I have a reason to bring this up. So let's say you alter how your body, your metabolism basically, to work slower or go dormant.
That would be really cool.
You could live twice as long by slowing down. Like, you only have to breathe every 60 seconds.
How would you do that? Well, what would you affect? Like, what gene would you...
Mitochondria, red blood cells. I mean...
There might be other ways of doing that. There might be some sort of supplement you could take or a stem cell injection or something like that.
Could you alter astronauts to be able to exist on Mars without spacesuits?
That would be awesome. I think they'd have to, you'd have to make their bones a lot more dense. Is that why you brought that up? Yeah.
Yeah. And be able to metabolize different things. So instead of oxygen at the level that we metabolize it, you know, maybe.
You could withstand really cold temperatures or something.
Yeah. Why not?
That'd be really
cool. Bacteria that can do that. There's bacteria that live near like volcanoes and underwater volcanoes, super cold areas. Yeah. So.
Or you could just download your consciousness to the cloud.
That's right.
Not have to worry about the whole thing.
Would you go to Mars?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
You wouldn't?
Maybe for a few days.
No.
Summer vacation.
If they were like, okay, we're like looking...
In Total Recall, maybe? I don't know.
We're looking for humans right now.
Nope.
To go to Mars. One-way trip. No. We're going to alter your DNA. You go there. You set up a house. You're gonna be there. This is your gig. You wouldn't go?
No.
Because you're married?
No. No, that has nothing to do with it. I might send her to Mars.
I haven't seen her in a little while. What's going on, Mike?
I'm only kidding.
I noticed that giant tree you've planted in the backyard. It's weird that the hole was so deep.
It's weird. Yeah, I don't know where that came
from. Why all the lime?
I don't know. This is what the contractors put in. No, but no. No.
Yeah, I don't absolutely want to be there. I'm so surprised by people who do.
I feel like I'm bored enough as it is. I can imagine sitting in Mars like, what do you want to do today? I don't know. We'll stare at these red rocks. There's nothing to do.
You're right.
I'm sure they would transmit Netflix.
Maybe. Oh, well, Netflix. Maybe that'd be different. But then it'd be
can you imagine the lag?
It would be me in like
6 days of that stupid spinning thing while your movie's trying to load up.
This is terrible. But then it'd be me and what? Like four other people?
It wouldn't be that many. Maybe six. No.
Not a chance. Not a chance.
I would.
Not a single chance.
You would do it? You would totally do that.
I feel like go put yourself in the middle of the woods for a month and then see how you can handle that, being alone with nothing. And then
living out in the desert sucked. I had a lot of people.
Maybe not in the middle of the woods. Maybe the middle of the desert would be worse. But put like four guys out in the middle of the desert with nothing. And then, I don't know. I guess that's what Mars would be like. Except worse.
You could also be Christopher Columbus. Like, you set foot on Mars, that you got a holiday after you for the rest of human existence. You've got...
But is that really the reason you would do it? For just glory?
You think so? Hmm. We step foot on the moon, and they don't have holidays after that.
Different.
Is it? You think so?
Yeah, slightly.
Neil Armstrong Day.
Yeah, they don't have Neil Armstrong.
Why is that different?
God damn it. We need Astronaut Day. What's that all about?
I'm just saying. I'm not entirely sure why that would be.
I would say it's different because, well, maybe they will. Maybe they will at some point.
When was that? 1968?
69 is when we went to the moon. Yeah, I don't know why. Al Shepard, first American in space. American, first human in space was Yuri Gagarin.
You have to remind me of his name because I wouldn't even know that name.
Al Shepard? The reason why I know Alan Shepard is because he went to my high school.
See? Yep,
Derry, New Hampshire.
I guess if you colonized Mars, then there'd be a day after you.
That's a big...
Well, you could name a city in Mars after you.
Yeah. There'd be a street.
Maybe a street.
Yeah. This is my street, and that's my mountain. I call it Kevin. Yeah, I don't know. But I would do it. Not for the, yeah, a little bit for the glory. Have you ever, yeah, I know. It's a
that
thing.
That makes no sense to me.
It's a genetic thing, I think. My people are from the land of the Celts. We for thousands of years held rocks and smashed each other the head so we could dominate a section of an island. I think it has something to do with that. It's got to be genetic. I just want to dominate a planet. Guess we should wind this up. Good talk.
Edit out everything that I said.
No, you're
all the nonsense.
And I said a lot of nonsense. So it'll basically be Mike laughing and jumping in every now and then. we had this.
You guys got going, and I was like, I have no idea what's happening right now.
I
was not prepared for any of this.
We had the serial killer guy that was here, remember? And he was like, he kept looking over here. He's like, is this your Ed McMahon?
Well, the way the questions were flying, I'm like, I have nothing. I'm just going to sit here and enjoy the show.
This whiskey, by the way, the Michter's Small Batch Bourbon, it smells really smooth and sweet, but it's got a burn. Like when you swallow it, it comes right up your nose. And but it smells delicious. It's probably the best smelling bourbon I've ever.
I like it. I think
it smells like maple and bacon.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Would
all
you
right.
Ever
well,
add eggnog to that, or is that a gross. Sin? Is that like a cardinal sin?
I don't mix bourbon with anything, but I guess you could. Sure.
Eggnog is gross already, so I don't.
Melted ice cream,
gross.
Kara loves it. Every year, there's eggnog in the fridge. Yeah,
I love it. wonderful so elixir terrible. Of life.
It's so melted gross. Ice cream. That's what it tastes
so
like.
So gross.
Add a little nutmeg like to it. It's not bad.
I like
that's universal sign for nutmeg, apparently. A little nutmeg. All right, Mike, you want to plug anything? We didn't do our little commercial break, but I don't know. This thing's going to turn off any moment.
Go ahead and do your thing, man. I don't have anything to talk about.
Do you have a new? We talked about Irish Crack last time you were here.
Yeah, I'm editing the other one right now.
Oh yeah, because you
getting
did
caught up because I'm getting closer and closer to my bar, so it's the podcast is kind of But I'll be back after it. I've gotten a couple different interviews in. This one out of Salem and the other one out of Boston, which was pretty cool.
Do you have a launch date for your bar? What's your
The goal right now is June.
Nice. So I'm going to be able to sit at your bar at some point in the next year.
Yeah.
All right.
What's it going to be called?
Oh, I'm working on a few names.
Oh, okay.
I can let you know. But there's one that's on the top of the list, but I think I'm going with. But I still got to just make sure it feels right. I got to try to figure out. It's one of those things. What am I trying to say? How do I say it? What words can I best use? So I don't know. I feel like I got a name, but I'm still playing with it.
I'm going to laugh so hard if it ends up being Mike's Bar.
Yeah, that's right. Come on down to Mike's place, folks. Just have a drink.
And then any recruiting for Triangle Futurists?
Oh, yeah. We are on meetup.com, so just look up the Triangle Futurists and just...
Where do you guys meet?
We meet at various places in Durham, sometimes City Beverage, sometimes Motor Co. But pretty much if you have an idea, like if you join the group and you have a thought for where you want to meet up, just send me a suggestion.
Clayton, North Carolina.
Yeah.
I should join the group. I didn't even realize it. Durham is
non-supportive of you.
I know. Well, you didn't listen to my last two podcasts, so
I did because I had heard your new British person.
Kimmy Pop, that's what she Kimmy goes Pop. By.
Okay.
Yeah, you just hire people through fiverr.com to do whatever. They read things, they can do commercials, they do. It's kind of cool.
She's probably from Texas.
Yeah, she could be. You're right. Oh, Durham. No, Durham is actually, yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff in Durham.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to find it. It can be scary. Durham can be a scary place. But if you know where to go, like, what's that area that...
Downtown Durham.
Yeah. What's the name of it? The area right near downtown. Like, you go back
like a few... Brightleaf Square.
Yeah. I was going to say Brightleaf, but I don't know. Oh, because I work off of Brightleaf Boulevard, and I thought that I was wrong. But no, yeah, Brightleaf Square. That's a pretty cool place. There's this antique shop in there where this guy's got all sorts of old avionics stuff. And I said that wrong. He's got, like, old sextant ports and these old navigation things. And I'm an old flyer. I'd love to go in there and just buy up his place. And he's a Kennedy, and that's kind of cool. I guess. I don't know why that's cool, because they're a bunch of douchebags. But it's kind of cool that he's a Kennedy, I guess. But, yeah. Durham's a cool place. It's underrated. And we're going to be going to Durham maybe tomorrow that's going to be a good show. We'll be able to talk about that, going to the Ryan Research Center to test our ESP abilities.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll go there. That's about it. Thank you for listening.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and at WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.